believe we're under a snowstorm, or, well, I believe a snow warning, or just essentially, yeah, so a lot of snow, and, oh, winter storm warning, that's what I was trying to think of. But, yeah, so there's heavy snow across central Illinois, and, yes, there is a winter storm warning, which will remain in effect until 6 a.m. tomorrow. And so, yeah, storm total snow accumulations of about 6 to 12 inches. And, yeah, so this is kind of all across central and east central Illinois. So be careful out there if you're driving, especially. I was driving on the way here. To Weft, and yeah, it's pretty bad. I mean, it could be better, obviously. Yeah, road conditions are, yeah, not the best. But, so, yeah, just to let you know, I'm Ben Theobald. I'm the usual kind of, and this is the program or show, public affairs show, The World We Live In. Quite a bit I want to talk about in this next hour. I'm going to try to do my best with what's been going on in politics. Of course, the government shutdown is heading into its, it's been going on for almost over 2 weeks. And it's now, as of January 12th, as of today, it is the longest shutdown in United States history, as the president and Congress and Senate kind of are not able to essentially come to agreements with a budget deal that would open the government. It'll be interesting to see how that keeps going. It's obviously affecting a lot of federal workers. There's obviously hundreds of thousands of federal workers who will not be getting a paycheck. And, of course, with tax season, essentially it's until April 14th or April, around that area. That time is, you know, when taxes are generally due. I know this might be kind of a little too early, but already we're of course having news about the presidential race for 2020. I believe yesterday, Representative in Hawaii, Tulsi Gabbard, announced that she would be running for president. She hasn't made it official, but she did announce, I think, on CNN that she would be running, or a show on CNN that she would definitely plans on running for president. So that recently announced Julian Castro, who I believe is the former San Antonio mayor. Says that he will be running for president of all the candidates and speculated candidates. So just in terms of people who are officially running. So we have Tulsi Gabbard, Julian Castro, Elizabeth Warren is at least announced that she is, forming a committee or a group that she will be running for president. Elizabeth Warren is the senator in Massachusetts. Before I forget, I just want to apologize. When I was talking about the new Congress people that were sworn into Congress last week, I forgot to mention Lauren Underwood, who is the U.S. representative for Illinois' 14th congressional district. She is the youngest African American congressional or Congress member. And so I apologize. I should have. So I apologize for not including her name and all those. All these new sworn-in women. All this most diverse Congress. So apologies. Yeah. So congratulations to Lauren Underwood. And wish her the best of luck. I'm sure she'll have a lot of, her work will be cut out. So in terms of, so back to people who are now the pool of congressional candidates, we have Tulsi Gabbard, Julian Castro, it looks like Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, the senator from California or in California. I think Cory Booker is looking like a potential likely candidate. Kirsten Gillibrand, who is, it looks like she's been making trips to Iowa. Well, most, it looks like she will be also probably running in 2020. She has, I believe she took the Senate seat that was once Hillary Clinton's Senate seat. I believe she's been a senator in New York. I'm just kind of looking at Google. And so she's, she's been a senator in New York since 2009. I'm just kind of looking and at kind of Google now. So I have the, and Kamala Harris was, I believe she got elected to the California senator. She was elected senator of California in 2017. Before that, she was the attorney general of California from 2011 to 2017. Cory Booker is the senator in New Jersey, who's been a senator since 2013. And he's the first African American U.S. senator from New Jersey, and it's looking like potential candidates are Beto O'Rourke, served as Texas 16th congressional district for 3 terms. He ran quite an impressive and almost beat Ted Cruz in Texas. That Senate race was a lot of people were impressed how close it was, considering that Beto O'Rourke is a Democrat, and so Texas is usually seen as a Republican, red Republican. So considering how close that was, people are thinking that maybe he can take that energy, use that kind of momentum and that. But and then I think others are Bernie Sanders, who the senator from Vermont, who of course ran in the Democratic primary back in 2016. Amy Klobuchar is another potential possible. Again, she's a senator from Minnesota. I believe she's been the senator there in 2006. So yes. And next this year, because I think a lot of senators have to, or a lot of candidates that will be running for, they have to start fundraising, because running a presidential campaign, especially if they want to be successful, they have to start fundraising. Getting their staff together, getting putting a campaign. So that's why you're hearing all this news now, even though we are 13, still over a year from the Iowa caucus. Speaking of Iowa, I will be talking about the Representative Steve King and his comments that he gave in the New York Times yesterday. As somebody who was it lived in Ames, Iowa. I went to Iowa State, majoring in journalism. So I will be, I have something, I want to speak personally and give my opinions on that, because I'm disgusted by that a congressman would say that and have those beliefs. And this is not the first time Representative Steve King has said and something that's just incredibly racist. And so I will be talking about that, so stay tuned for that. I kind of want to, there's just some other things I would like to get to before I talk about that. So in kind of with all these candidates announcing their candidacy for presidency, near their candidacy or possible candidacy, I would like to play a speech, John Kennedy's speech. He announced a little bit late with this, but well, I would like to play it. This is John F. Kennedy announcing his candidacy for president. And of course, he was the 35th president of the United States, I believe, from 1961 until his assassination in November 1963. So this is John Kennedy announcing his candidacy for president, and this was January 22nd, 1960. So without further ado.
I want to thank you all for coming, and I'll read this statement, which is for immediate release. I am announcing today my candidacy for the presidency of the United States. The presidency is the most powerful office in the free world. Through its leadership can come a more vital life for all of our people. In it are centered the hopes of the globe around us for freedom and a more secure life. For it is in the executive branch that the most crucial decisions of this century must be made in the next 4 years. How to end or alter the burdensome arm race where Soviet gains have already threatened our very existence. How to maintain freedom and order in the newly emerging nations. How to rebuild the stature of American science and education. How to prevent the collapse of our farm economy and the decay of our cities. How to achieve, without further inflation or unemployment, expanded economic growth benefiting all Americans. And how to give direction to our traditional moral purpose, awakening every American to the dangers and opportunities that confront us. These are among the real issues of 1960. And it is on the basis of these issues that the American people must make their fateful choice for the future. In the past 40 months, I have toured every state in the Union, and I have talked to Democrats in all walks of life. My candidacy is therefore based on the conviction that I can win both the nomination and the election. I believe that any Democratic aspirant to this important nomination should be willing to submit to the voters his views, record, and competence in a series of primary contests. I am therefore now announcing my intention of filing in the New Hampshire primary, and I shall announce my plans with respect to other primaries as their filing dates approach. I believe that the Democratic Party has a historic function to perform in the winning of the 1960 election, comparable to the 1932 election. I intend to do my utmost to see that that victory is won. For 18 years, I have been in the service of the United States, for 4 years as a naval officer, and for the last 14 years as a member of the Congress. In the last 20 years, I have traveled to nearly every country and every continent, from Leningrad to Saigon, from Bucharest to Lima. From all of this, I have developed an image of America as fulfilling a noble and historic role as the defender of freedom in a time of maximum peril, and of the American people as confident, courageous, and persevering. It is with this image that I begin this campaign. I'd be glad to answer any questions anyone might have.
Senator, you do not leave any doubt about such contesting primaries as Wisconsin and Oregon, do you, in this state?
Well, I'm going to make a judgment on an announcement on those two primaries and other primaries, I would say within the next 5 or 6 weeks, certainly as the filing date approaches. Of course, in the case of Oregon, the candidates do not enter, but the Secretary of State enters. I have presumed that the Secretary of State would probably enter me, but I will make an announcement in regard to it in any case, and also in regard to Wisconsin, Nebraska, Indiana, Maryland, and other primaries. Also Ohio.
Have you heard from Governor DeSalle yet? He was supposed to have a conversation with him shortly after the first of the year on what his plan for. Have you had that?
I expect to have it after the first, beginning, the first of the year begins today, so I expect to have it shortly.
Senator, in the next few days.
I expect to be talking to him, yes.
Senator, can you discuss generally the Florida primary?
Excuse me? I'm sorry. The question was whether I've talked to Governor DeSalle. In the question was the statement that I had stated that I would talk to him after the first of the year. I said that I expect to do so. The question was whether I was going to, what my position was on running in the Wisconsin and Oregon primary. No, I have not made any verbal commitment. And the Florida primary is one of the primaries which, on which I'll make a judgment and really rather an announcement in the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Senator, would you refuse the vice presidential nomination under any circumstances?
I will not be a candidate for vice president under any circumstances, and that is not subject to change by any conditions. I will not be a candidate. I will not be the nominee. I will not, therefore, accept a nomination for vice president under any conditions. And as I've stated, this will not be subject to change by any conditions. Because I'm a candidate for the presidency, and if I fail to achieve that nomination, then I shall return to the Senate. I think that I can, the vice presidency, the office really is, the powers are limited to presiding over the Senate, to voting in cases of ties, which Mr. Nixon's only had to do 8 or 10 or 12 times, and to watching the health of the president. And I would rather be in the Senate.
Senator, what about the California primary?
That is one of the primaries, of course, and I shall make a judgment on that. And an announcement on that, on all primaries, in the next, I would say, 6 weeks.
Senator, can you say anything?
But I shall run in a number of other primaries in addition to New Hampshire.
Senator, can you say anything about your campaign organization, particularly the role of people like Mr. Bailey and Governor Ribbicoff in Connecticut?
Well, Governor Ribbicoff has been my earliest supporter, and also Mr. Bailey, since 1956. And I've relied very heavily upon them both. And will continue to do so.
Senator, have you chosen a national campaign manager yet?
No, and I have no plans to do so.
Is your brother Robert going to have a position in your...
Yes, he's going to help, definitely.
Can you tell us what that position will be?
No, but he'll play, a very helpful role. He managed my 52 campaign, and I think he'll play a very... I think helpful role this time. Well, I would put it really, the question was whether I constituted whether I would interpret my remarks in regard to primaries and the necessity for candidates entering primaries as a direct challenge to Senator Symington to come in and get his feet wet. I would say that any candidate who plans to have his name presented as a serious candidate in July should enter some representative primaries. Now, I have no idea what Senator Symington's plans are. I would accept from that, of course, Governor Stevenson, for two reasons. First, because he's made it clear that he has no plans to be a candidate, and secondly, because he has campaigned both in 52 and 1956, and I think the Democratic Party and the country are aware of his character and qualities. I think the value of the primary system really is to permit the people as a whole, Democrats as a whole, to make their judgment, and also because it illuminates the quality of the candidate. And we can get a much better idea of what the potential of a candidate, both politically and as a potential president, would be after a series of primary contests. I was surprised, but didn't make me glad. I didn't have any really effect on me. In some ways, I think it makes Mr. Nixon's problem more difficult. In some ways.
Who is your main threat among the Democratic candidates?
Well, I think that, I'm sorry, there was just a question as to who was I considered to be the main threat among the Democratic candidates. I think there are four or five candidates, and I don't think it will be possible for at least the next 2 or 3 months to make a judgment. My opinion is by May, we will have a pretty good idea who's going to get nominated in July. Because I think when the primaries are through, we're going to have a pretty clear idea as to who is going to be the nominee. I don't believe there's going to be a deadlock convention. I don't agree with that concept at all. And I would think that even before the convention, the pattern would be quite clear. Well, the question was what kind of a campaign I plan to make in New Hampshire. I think it depends really as to whether anyone else enters New Hampshire. If they don't enter New Hampshire, then I'll spend some days in New Hampshire in February and March. I'm sorry? Well, I hope to enter it with enough to be successful, but I have no, I haven't made a calculation. Well, Governor Patterson, if he continues, he's announced his support of me, and if he, and as far as I know, that support still stands. And it seems to me the real question here is that if I make, I think I've made my views quite precise on civil rights. I hope I have, and I'm delighted to do so in any time in the future. If anyone then decides they want to support me, knowing what my views are, it seems to me that that's within their rights. And that goes for anyone in the Democratic Party.
Do you favor the federal registrar proposal?
Well, I would be inclined, I would be for anything which is necessary in order to protect the right to vote. Now, I thought that Title IV did that. It appears to it that it hasn't. And while I haven't seen the final version of the legislation, in fact, I understand no legislation has been introduced, I would be very interested to hear any objections to it, because I would be sympathetic and inclined to support any proposal which is constitutional and responsible and which will make it possible for all Negroes, all citizens to vote in all parts of the country, which I think must be one of the goals of the Congress this year. I can't give you much more of a precise view than that I'm inclined to support the concept. I haven't heard any of the discussion. I think that I'd like to hear some hearings on it. I'd like to hear what changes might be made in the proposal. I'd be interested in what the objections would be to it. And that's my view on it. Yes, I do. I would certainly think it would be in Oregon and perhaps other places.
You've been attacked by Wayne Morris and another for your
Well, I consider the bill, while it has some, it's not the bill that I proposed. It's different from the bill which passed the Senate, which I endorsed. It represented a compromise. We didn't achieve everything we wanted in the conference. There are provisions in it which are still unsatisfactory, but I recommended that the Senate adopt the bill. I believe overall it's a useful bill. I believe overall it's in the public interest. There are still provisions in it which I would rewrite if I had the opportunity, but overall I support the bill. And I must say that I think if we had followed the policy and the procedures recommended by Senator Morse, we would have gotten no bill either this year, which would have given us a far worse situation next year, as we had a far worse situation this year than the year before, or we would have had the original Landrum-Griffin bill, which I think would have been a great mistake. So I think that the actions of the Senate, the actions of the Democratic Party, 64 out of 65, in supporting the conference report, I think indicates really where equity lay. Well, I'd say the number one issue is our relations with the Soviet Union and the Chinese. And therefore, I would say that in the elements of that relationship, I would say national defense is, at this particular time, is primary. So I would have to put national defense at the very top of the issues in 1960. There are other elements of foreign policy in our relations with the communists which are also important. I would hope that disarmament, or at least in the atomic field, the cessation of tests could be achieved. I would hope, as the third prong of what I would consider to be the most important parts of foreign policy, a more effective program of assistance by not only the United States, but the Western Europeans and the Japanese to the newly emerging countries. So I would say that these are all elements of our of the overall issue. National defense, we hope an agreement on testing, and even to proceed further than that if it's possible, though I agree that the atmosphere is cloudy now. And thirdly, to carry on a more effective program than this administration has been willing to support in the field of foreign aid.
Senator, you mentioned the Chinese. Does this foreshadow perhaps any indication of change in your thinking about recognition of Red China?
No, I think it would be a mistake today to recognize them, but I think that we ought to indicate our willingness to do so if they are willing to alter their policies towards us and towards South Asia. I don't think that we should adopt a policy which freezes us for the future. And I think that our conditions should be always told to the world. I don't think there should be any doubt that we would recognize them if the Red Chinese indicated and gave guarantees that they were willing to live in some sort of comity with us until they're willing to do so. And I don't think that they are today. I would not recognize them. I would bring about some change in our policy on some specific areas. I think Quemoy and Matsu. But on the overall question, I couldn't recognize, wouldn't be in favor of recognizing him today.
That was John F. Kennedy, what he was announcing, who eventually would be elected as the United States' 35th president. And so thank you to Gordon Skeen YouTube channel for having that audio available for me to play today. Just going to get to announcement, and this is a audio announcement, so I'm going to play that, and so I'll play that and be right back. So stay tuned for more WEFT after this underwriting announcement.
WEFT is supported in part by Kevin Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including State of Illinois employee insurance, is accepted, and there is also a self-pay sliding scale. Kevin Elliott or his staff can be reached at 398-9066 or ELLIOTT Counseling Group.
Thank you to that. January 8th marked the anniversary of Harvey Milk being elected to public office in California. Harvey Milk was the first openly gay man elected to public office, and this is just some kind of a very some interviews that Mr. Milk had given when he was campaigning and running for office in California. I believe it was San Francisco. So this is Harvey Milk.
You know, it makes a difference. People sometimes feel that $1 doesn't count, but your dollar does and your vote does, and it's needed. If every gay person in this state came out to their family, their friends, we would win. But that means that every gay person must come out to their family so their family doesn't vote against them, to their friends if they are indeed their friends, to their relatives, to the people where they work, and to the next door neighbors, nobody else. If that happened across the state, we win. If not, it's going to be a tight battle. People of California, even though they're basically conservative, I think have gotten up and said the movement from the right has just gone too far, that we've got to get back to the basic things and solve the basic problems of the nation and not start to try to pick on each other and fight on each other. And let's work together. And that's an incredible statement. I think the gay people themselves now have to join in and make this state powerful.
I wear two hats. One is I'm dedicated to the city and district, dedicated to it. But I also realize that symbolically that I am not just to gay people, but to many other people, I'm a symbol of hope.
I understand what he's saying. It's like you judge all black people by the few blacks we have stereotypes of, and we judge all the Spanish people by the few stereotypes, and you judge all gay people by those that you see visibly doing things you don't like, and that's an easy thing to do, and it is a natural fear. But we found out, I grew up in a period when the same things were blacks. We didn't want blacks to be teachers because of the role playing they would have.
What really counts? Does a person care? Does a person care about his city or her city? Is a person sensitive to the needs of people? And that's the only thing that counts. And that's what San Francisco's saying once again.
I figured there was about 100, 150,000 gay people in Dade County. We got a total of about 90,000 votes, including friends. That's low. We're not going to let it happen here in San Francisco or California. And we're going to set the example nationwide that if we do it here, do it in Cincinnati, do it in Nashville, do it in Louisiana. Do it. We'll set the leadership.
I like it on the other side of the hall. I like the debate of the legislative body. That to me is exciting. This is an administrator's job. Not my cup of tea, yet.
That was Harvey Milk, kind of just a clips of, you know, him, you know, when he was running for office and why he's running and why. So thank you to Daniel Gadalhal YouTube channel for having that audio available for my show. I'll do a couple more announcements and maybe one more news story or two until I get what I want to talk about. I'll be roughly at the last quarter or so of my show. Screening, these are the art theater listings for this week. So playing from today, or they started yesterday and they'll be going through January 17th. Screening daily is If Beale Street Could Talk, which begins in the early 1970s, Harlem, New York. The story concerns a daughter and wife-to-be who recalls the passion, respect, and trust that connected her to her artist fiancé. Friends since childhood, the devoted couple dream of a future together, but a false arrest details their plans. Also playing is A League of Their Own. Women's baseball has never been portrayed better than in this movie, A League of Their Own, directed by the late Penny Marshall, who unfortunately passed away, a few weeks ago. But that will be screening on Tuesday, January 14th, at 7:30 p.m. Of course, there's other movies, tons of other, many other movies you can see. And of course, for if you want to and want to know more about up-to-date days and times, please feel free to consult the Art Theater's website, theartheater.org, or just, you know, Google Art Theater Champaign. It'll take you right to their website. The Champaign's Men's Emergency Winter Shelter is available now through March 31st, 2019, between the hours of 8:30 p.m. and 7:30 a.m. This shelter is located at 70 East Washington Street, and if you, there is some food available, it's mostly like snacks, but no meals are served, and there, unfortunately, there are no showers and laundry available. Of course, for more up-to-date time, you can contact Corey Blackwell at Faith United Methodist Church. If you want to, you can contact them at 217-359-3631. There's also the Champaign's Women's Emergency Shelter, known as Austin's Place, which is available through March 15th, between the hours of 7:30 p.m. and 7 a.m. Screening for the shelter will occur at Courage Connection, 504 East Church Street, Champaign, from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. each week. Transportation to the shelter is at First United Methodist Church, will be provided by volunteers. Again, light snacks are available, but no meals are served. Showers and laundry are not available, but guests will be provided with bus tokens in the morning. And of course, for more information, you can contact Scott Easton. The phone number is, if you want to contact or call, phone number is 217-278-1416. Of course, other locations to stay warm, because we've been getting a lot of snow today and will be, I guess, until tomorrow. Other locations to stay warm, but keep in mind these are during normal business hours, are the Champaign Public Library, the Urbana Free Public Library, Lincoln Square Mall, and the Marketplace Mall. I think I'm just going to dive in. Well, I really want to talk about this. Representative in Iowa known as Steve King, who you you might have heard or have heard about, has been under fire for some controversial, wouldn't be enough to say it. I'm just going to say it, just outright racist comments he made about how what's wrong with white supremacy and being a white nationalist. And as I mentioned before, I went to Iowa State University. He represents that part of Iowa, Ames, Iowa. And the fact that he, as a sitting congressman and as a member of public office, that he would say, and this is not the first time Steve King has made, controversial, I don't think is even enough to describe some of the things he has said. And just to give you, just kind of provide evidence of that, this is an article in the Des Moines Register that was published back in November 1st, 2018, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, the reporter Lynn Ta of the Des Moines Register. He has had a history of making controversial remarks or just outright racist remarks on the U.S. House floor. In July 2006, Representative Steve King suggested building a border wall along the country's southern border and said the top of the fence could be electrified, not to kill a person, but instead discourage them from fooling around with it. We do that with livestock all the time, King said. In March, and this is another, this is just, this reporter just wrote a number of examples. This was in March 2008, Representative Steve King said terrorists would celebrate a Barack Obama presidency and that Al-Qaeda would be, quote, dancing in the streets in great numbers than they did on September 11th because they would declare victory in this war on terror. King also said terrorists would be gleeful about Obama's pledge to pull U.S. troops from Iraq and that Obama's father had Muslim roots in Kenya and gave his son the middle name Hussein. And it just keeps going. While talking about Dreamers in a July 2013 interview for Newsmax TV, King claimed that for every young immigrant who becomes a school valedictorian, that there are 100 there that they weigh 130 pounds and that they've got calves the size of cantaloupes because they're hauling 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert. In May 2012, in the town hall, King said that the U.S. should, King's Representative Steve King said that the U.S. should select the best immigrants, a process he likened to choosing hunting dogs. Quote, you want a good bird dog? You want one that's going to be aggressive, King said. Pick the one that's the friskiest, not the one that's over there sleeping in the corner, end quote. In July 2016, I believe this was during the Republican primary had ended. I believe this was at the RNC convention, the Republican National Convention. Steve King, again, created an uproar on social media after he questioned the contributions of non-white people during a cable television appearance in July 2016. And in response to a comment about the lack of diversity seen at the Republican National Convention, King questioned who has had more contributions to civilization than white people. Quote, I'm just going to read it. I'm not going to play the... I'd ask you to go back through history and figure out where are these contributions that have been made by these other categories of people that you're talking about? Where did any other subgroup of people contribute more to civilization, he said. In July 2016, during a camera interview with Sioux City television station KCAU, this was in July 2016, following the death of two Des Moines area police officers, King said he was displaying in this interview that was being broadcasted, he displayed a Confederate flag on his office desk. Following the death of two Des Moines area police officers, King said he removed the flag after learning that Scott Michael Green, the perpetrator, had displayed it at an Urbandale High School football game, according to the Sioux City Journal. And this is another, I'm reading from this Des Moines Register article, just going through all the examples of Steve King's controversial or just outright racist signs that he has displayed. In a tweet posted in March 2017, King was criticized across the political spectrum for a tweet supporting Geert Wilders, a far-right candidate for prime minister in the Netherlands, widely interpreted as racist. Steve King tweeted on March 12, 2017, Wilders understands that culture and demographics are our destiny. We can't restore our civilization with somebody else's babies. That was a tweet he had sent out on March 12, 2017. King further explained to CNN that you've got to keep your birth rate up and that you need to teach your children your values. In doing so, you can grow your population, you can strengthen your culture, and you can strengthen your way of life. in a tweet, another tweet posted September 2016, King warned that culture is suicide by demographic transformation must end. He later defended his comment during a candidate forum and said, uncontrolled immigration in the U.S. could lead to ethnic strife similar to that experienced in Europe. In a speech on the House floor in July 2017, King compared the use of taxpayer money on hormone therapies and gender reassignment surgery for U.S. service members to the castration of Ottoman Empire slaves. There's more examples. In a meme posted on King and Steve King's campaign Facebook page, the congressman ridiculed Emma Gonzalez, an outspoken survivor of the Parkland school shooting that happened almost a year ago, February of 2018. The Parkland in Florida. Posted in March, this meme referenced to Gonzalez's Cuban heritage and said, your ancestors fled the island when the dictatorship turned Cuba into a prison camp after removing all weapons from its citizens, hence their right to self-defense. And Iowa Jewish, this was, I'm not exactly sure when this was posted, but King was recently criticized as would have been in October of last year, 2018, following reports that he met with members. In fact, I believe he tweeted, I do believe I have the actual tweet. He was criticized in October following the reports that he met with members of an Austrian far-right party associated with neo-Nazi movements after visiting Holocaust sites. And I believe I have the tweet right here in front of me. King tweeted, diversity is not our strength. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, I guess he was quoting the Hungarian Prime Minister, mixing cultures will not lead to a higher quality of life, but a lower one, end quote. So this is not the first time. I'm not even sure if you could say it's the 10th time that Steve King has tweeted said incredibly racist remarks and freely expressing his racist thoughts. And just to kind of, as Steve King said that, considering he asked, what is so offensive about white supremacy? Well, and just to give you the definition of white supremacy, this is from dictionary.com. White supremacy is the belief, theory, or doctrine that white people are inherently superior to people from all other racial groups, especially black people, and are therefore rightfully the dominant group in any society. And let me just speak as somebody who went to Iowa State, was a student, and graduated from Iowa State University, which is located in Ames, Iowa, which Steve King represents as a congressman. I believe he's the fourth Iowa's fourth congressional, it is absolutely disgusting. And I can only speak for myself, but it is disgusting that Steve King has been allowed to say all these just outright racist, outright xenophobic thoughts. And that he has been allowed to serve as a member of Congress at a Iowa State University, which has students in Ames, Iowa, and that I know that part of Iowa. There's all types of people that live in there. Blacks, Asians, I'm sure Native Americans, Muslims, you know, Latinos, Hispanics, just the fact that Representative Steve King just has been given the pass by generally Republicans that he serves with. They have given him a pass which says that it is okay to say any kind of racism, any kind of just absolute disgust. I want to read a few more things before I end my show. I got about 5 or so minutes. This is a poem by Langston Hughes that I would like to read. Hopefully I can I apologize, so just bear with me here. This is Let America Be America Again by Langston Hughes. And I'll just kind of quickly read it. I apologize if I kind of don't do a good job reading it, but this is, so yeah, Langston Hughes, Let America Be America Again. Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain, seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream is dreamed. Let it be the great strong land of love, where never kings connive nor tyrants seem, that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark, and who are you that draws your veil across the stars? I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek, and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog-eat-dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient, endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men, of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer bondsman to the soil. I am the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean. Hungry yet today, despite the dream. Beaten yet today, O pioneers. I am the man who never got ahead. The poorest worker bartered throughout the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream. In the world while still a serf of kings. Who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true. That even yet its mighty daring sings. In every brick and stone, in every furrow turned, that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home. For I'm the one who left in dark Ireland's shore, in Poland's plain, in England's grassy lee, and torn from black Africa's strand I came, to build a homeland of the free. The free, who said the free, not me. Surely not me, the millions on relief today, the millions shot down when we strife, the millions who have nothing for our pay, for all the dreams we've dreamed, and all the songs we've sung, and all the hopes we've held, and all the flags we've hung, the millions who have nothing for our pay, except the dream that's almost dead today. Let America be America again, the land that never has been yet, and yet must be, the land where every man is free, the land that's mine, the poor man, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again. Sure, call me an ugly name you choose, the steel of freedom does not stain. From those who live like leeches on the people's lives, we must take back our land again. America, oh yes, I say it plain, America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangsters' death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains and the endless plain, all that stretch of these great green streets and make America again. But yeah, that was Langston Hughes, Let America Be America's, his poem. Just a reminder, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. I just want to... I wish I had just a little bit more time, but I'm going to have to try to make do with what I can. I guess... I wanted to read a little bit more, from this article. In terms of, I think, we America, as you're saying, is the land of opportunity, and for immigrants, if you're a white, unless if you're a Native American, your ancestors were immigrants and who came in here, and. I just want to read this last ending of this article, of this New York Times article, and I want to give credit to this New York Times article that was written by Layla Lalami. This was published in the New York Times Magazine. What does it take to assimilate in America? I won't have time to read the whole thing, but I want to read just like the last paragraph, and which says, America is different from Europe in one significant way. It has a long and successful history of integrating its immigrants, even if each new generation thinks that the challenges it faces are unique and unprecedented. It is a nation in which people will wear green on St. Patrick's Day without thinking much about the periods during which the Irish were accused of contaminating the nation with their foreign habits, because there is no objective measuring of assimilation. Many people end up throwing up their hands and saying, I know it when I see it. So the question is, who is doing the judging here? And honestly, as I said, we're a nation of immigrants, and, no matter who you are and where you come from, everyone deserves an opportunity to make a life here in America, because we're a melting pot, we're a nation of immigrants, we're a diverse country, and I wanted to say more and play on speech, but I thoroughly believe that diversity is what makes us, or gives us strength here in America, and gives us, because it makes us open-minded, it makes us open-minded to other cultures. So, honestly, and I think that Steve King should resign or be expunged from Congress, but that's just my opinion. So, that'll be it for my show, The World, here at WFT. So stay tuned for more programming here at WFT 90.1 FM. Please be safe out there. The weather is really kind of not great with the snow, so please be safe out there and enjoy the rest of your day Saturday.
Calling the negativity.